This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Michael, good morning. How are you, sir?
Molly, good morning. David, good morning to you.
Loved yesterday. Listen, this weekend is one of the great weekends on the sports calendar, and I thought it delivered yesterday. I thought there were some really fun games. I was stunned at how Clemson didn't turn up in the first half. I was not expecting a 13-point performance. I did have Drake as my upset special, so it was delightful, if you have him on the bracket, to watch what they managed to pull off. Just a really interesting, strange kind of performance. The way they actually turned the ball over, they're usually much better than that protecting the ball. But, man, did they fight every possession, and they had a heck of a performance.
Yeah, that was interesting. One of the interesting things about the way yesterday went for Drake and Mizzou was the fact that Drake didn't play their best. They did an effective job with what they do, which is to force you to get uncomfortable. But they didn't play their best. I thought they forced clock a lot more than they used. I mean, they want to go late, but they don't want to violate the shot clock, and they did that a couple of times in the first half. They turned it over a high number of times relative to how they play because there are so few possessions. You don't want to turn it over. I mean, the percentage of turnovers becomes much higher if you turn it. I don't remember what their final number was, but if you turn it over a dozen times in a game, that's a lot different than turning it over a dozen times or even 15 times in a high-paced game. And they didn't all shoot the ball great, but they were so precise in their execution when they didn't turn it over that Mizzou was really uncomfortable. And they did exactly what I thought they would do. It's just that Mizzou reacted to that even more disappointingly, I guess, than I had imagined. I thought that it would be a Drake victory, but I didn't think they could play like that and win as comfortably as they did.
Mike, let's look at the McNeese State upset of Clemson, because going in, I'll acknowledge it made me uncomfortable to have Will Wade openly accept a job at North Carolina State and also still coach McNeese State in the tournament, the biggest moment of this program's history, and it turned out to be the day of their lives. I think that he's a terrific coach. I was a little bit surprised that they allowed him to coach, but they did. The players were not distracted, and all's well that ends well. What was your reaction to how that all unfolded?
Yeah, I will. The only thing I disagree with what you just said is all's well that ends well. One of the things, the line I used in the column that I wrote critical of how he comported himself was that winning and losing are not the only two outcomes in a game. And I thought that for him to do what he did on Wednesday and how he handled the questions at the press conference, I mean, there's a roadmap followed by 1,000 other coaches in the last 20 years of college basketball on how to deal with that question. Oh, I'm just focused on my team. We have a chance to do something special here, and we're going to deal with that. In some variation of that sentence. And there are public relations professionals that could have helped Will understand that in the unlikely event that he hadn't ever seen anybody deal with that question. And yet he's got to be this little scoundrel. Like, he gets off on it, and it's just ridiculous. And I just don't find it funny, amusing, interesting, compelling, or anything. That's for reality TV. This is sports, and it's college sports, and you're supposed to behave like an adult and a professional. And somehow he always manages to make sure that he's a little bit outside that boundary, if not a lot.
Well said. You know the Big Ten very well. They went 4-0, and interesting today because you got a chance to double down. You got Michigan State against Bryant. We know that Maryland plays Grand Canyon. Obviously, we're very interested in the Illinois game here and Oregon against Liberty. It seems like Illinois, with the lowest seed, might have the toughest game with Xavier winning in the play-in.
Yeah, I mean, but the problem is, Molly, is that Illinois' toughest game every time they take the court, with the possible exception of when they went to the Garden and played Duke, their toughest game is against themselves and what they're capable of. That's the challenge that they meet a little more rarely than you'd prefer. They don't always go into games and say, we're going to be the best version of themselves, or they don't. Maybe they say it and they don't live up to it. That's been the frustrating element of this Illinois season, and some of it's being young. I get that, but you're not that young anymore. You've played 35 college games, and a lot of them, the vast majority of them, have been played against high-end opposition. So you should be accustomed to that by now. And they have played great basketball on so many occasions that it gives you belief not only that you can conquer Xavier, but what lies beyond that. Kentucky or Tennessee or whomever. I've seen people say, I think they're going to the Elite Eight, and I can't argue with that other than, yeah, but it means they got to play well three times in a row. How many times has that happened this year? So that's the thing about Illinois that concerns me going into today. Xavier's certainly good enough to beat a less than ideal Illinois effort. But there are a lot of teams in this tournament you could say that about.
Mike, great column on the matchup between Arkansas and St. John's tomorrow. The fifth time in the NCAA tournament that John Calipari and Rick Pitino will meet. They're 2-2. And I love the way that you point out that even though they're often compared because of their similar paths and pasts, I think stylistically they're in contrast in many ways in terms of the way they coach their basketball teams. How much fun will that be, and how similar and different are they at this stage of their careers?
Well, in reality, they've never really been similar other than they're both handsome and Italian. I don't think there are very many comparisons. I mean, you have the fact that they both coached at Kentucky. They both coached in the NBA. They both didn't coach great in the NBA. They both won championships. They both made multiple Final Fours and have made Final Fours at three different schools. They're the only coaches in history to do that. So their records may be similar and their paths may be a little similar, but stylistically they're not even close to the same. And they're not even really personally all that close to the same. They're different in that way as well. I remember in the 80s when I was a young basketball writer and reading, and I pointed out in the piece that I wrote today that it was in some of the biggest papers in America, the comparison of the two of them, and writers calling Calipari a Pitino clone, and it frustrated the heck out of me when I was young then, and I didn't have the platform to tell everybody how full of it they were because they weren't similar. Rick has always preferred a very wide open style. Up and down, press if you have to, get the ball moving, shoot it from deep. He was one of the very first coaches to adopt the three-point approach. He was a pioneer in that regard. And Calipari has always been a favored control, defending the lane, making sure that you are keeping opponents from getting anywhere near the rim. Controlled approach on offense was what he preferred, in large part because he didn't have, at the time he was establishing himself as a coach, superior talent to almost anybody he played. People who think of of Calipari now as just a recruiter weren't around or weren't paying attention in the 80s and the early 90s when he was winning games with UMass guys that, like, I was in Pittsburgh then, and Duquesne didn't recruit them. They were from Pittsburgh, and Calipari came in and got Jim McCoy and Will Herndon. And I covered those guys in high school. And even Duquesne, which was in the Atlantic 10 at the time, didn't offer those guys. And he gets them, and he wins 30 games with them and plays in the Sweet 16. So they really aren't that similar in that sense. But now they face each other once again. They have, for their lack of similarity, they found themselves on the same court. I think this is the 29th meeting between the two of them. It's pretty remarkable that they've intersected that often.
Mike, I know you're going to be covering Duke and Mount St. Mary's today. I'm curious, you know, I the more you hear about Cooper Flagg, the more you start kind of picking nit. I told David before I made my selections, I want to see an MRI, but but that's unrealistic. I'm just wondering, the fact that he's available to go, does that mean he goes? Does that mean he starts? I know he wants to play. How do they deploy him today?
Today is not particularly important,
right?
To how, I mean, they can beat Mount St. Mary's with me playing his position. No offense to Mount St. Mary's, but the other four guys are really good. But I think the important thing is that he be involved on Saturday at a reasonably high level, because you don't just walk in at the Sweet 16 and say, okay, I'm here, everything's right. When you mix in players who haven't been involved for a while, it can be a little disruptive. And when you mix in a player who is such a profound part of what you do at the Sweet 16 level, when if it just doesn't click for 3 minutes, it could change the game and send you home. I mean, it may not, but it could. And so you want him to be involved on Sunday. If he's ready to go on Sunday, that's great. If he can go up and down a court a few times today, okay. But I'm not even sure I'd risk that. I'd have him dressed, but I wouldn't risk it unless for some reason Duke found itself in a game against UMB, the combination of UMBC and FDU, and found itself in a real game. I don't think that will happen. I mean, if you go through the ACC tournament and beat Louisville and Carolina and Georgia Tech with basically no Cooper Flagg, you certainly can do it against Mount St. Mary's. But I'm very much intrigued to see what he's available to do on Sunday.
So, Mike, UCLA was one of the Big Ten teams that won its first-round game, beating Utah State 72-47. And afterward, Mick Cronin, I respect everything that he's accomplished, and I know you probably know him very well from his 13 years in Cincinnati. And I'm just curious, help me understand what it is about him that it seems like when he talks, he either wants to incite or insult, and he's very rough around the edges. And I think that he comes at you directly. So there's part of me that respects everything that he's accomplished because that's an effective communicating style for him. And other times I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy is still talking. So knowing him as well as you do, help me understand his method.
I don't always understand his method. There have been things that have been vexing to me, that the complaints about the travel in the Big Ten, I didn't understand because I looked at it as, if you put it in your players' heads that that's a thing, then it might be a thing. And so I would not have done that. But first of all, Mick is one of the best people in coaching. He's a great person, great father to his daughter, Sammy. And one of the people that you would want to live next to. I said in my article about Will Wade that there are people that you would not want to marry into your family, and you would not be disappointed if Mick somehow did. He's a really good person. Sometimes there are things that he does that vex me for sure, but I think that at the end it always seems to work out for him. He knows what he's doing. When he said the things he said back in, I think it was early January, about his players not bringing it at the level they needed to, he took a lot of criticism for that. And I have a friend who's a UCLA alum who texts me every time he gets upset with Mick, basically, as if I'm like in charge of, I'm like the president of Mick Incorporated, and I'm supposed to fix it. And And he, and I said to him, look, he's just, you know, he's just trying to get his guys' attention. Don't worry. And then they won like their next seven games in a row and became this team that is now in the second round of the NCAAs. So he has a method for almost everything he does. And as frustrating as it can be, his press conferences don't go outside any lines of professionalism or comportment or anything like that. He is wary of saying one thing and it being interpreted another. Calipari might have been wary of walking onto a court in 1989 and wearing a suit and having people call him a Patino clone, even though it didn't make any sense. So I understand that part of it. There are times when I don't agree with what he says. I'm not sure that yesterday was necessarily particularly, especially in the Will Wade atmosphere, I wasn't particularly bothered by anything he said yesterday.
Did anybody yesterday surprise you with their performance? Is anybody, any of the teams you saw, capable of doing significantly more than you thought? And I'll just say, I thought BYU was a lot better than I thought they were. They played very well, and I was genuinely surprised at how bad they beat VCU. I thought VCU was a better team.
Molly, was this you being nice and setting me up so I can say I was 16-0 yesterday?
Is that wow!
Look at you.
That's awesome.
It's the only time in my career it's ever happened, but I did get every game right, and I do have BYU, by the way, going to the Elite Eight.
Wow!
I liked the way their draw opened up for them. I thought they were in a good spot, and I don't think they'll go. If they do get to the Elite Eight, I don't think they'll beat a healthy Duke. But I like the way they play. I like how offensively oriented they are. I mean, the way they play their offense, really effective. The guys have all bought into the system that and approach that Kevin Young brought with him from the NBA. In order to justify my bragging there, I will point out that I was very critical of the Kevin Young hire. I didn't like it. I didn't look at that particular decision as following what typically works. Bringing guys in from the NBA has not worked often, but this was he's gotten off to a great start. He's brought in for next year, the number one player in the country, AJ Devonta. So they're off to a terrific start at BYU, and will be more so if I'm right and they wind up in the Elite Eight. That'll be a heck of a year for the Cougars.
Okay, clairvoyant one, tell us what will happen tonight when you talk about a great coaching matchup. You've got Danny Hurley in UConn. You've got Porter Moser in Oklahoma. We talked to Porter yesterday. There's a lot of people in Chicago, big Oklahoma fans tonight. How do you see that one unfolding?
Yeah, you know, I really like Jeremiah Fears. I think he's outstanding for Oklahoma, one of the better freshman players in the country. I think UConn's got a more complete group. They're a team that has, much like Gonzaga, has really wrestled with who they are, what they can be for a lot of the year. And they started to show down the stretch. Some of it was that their key, Liam McNeely, their key offensive player, was hurt for all of January. And that really threw them off track. And so I think they're just starting to get to where they should be. I think Oklahoma has played much better of late, but I don't think their ceiling is as high. To me, it'll come down to whether or not UConn gets the level of offensive production from their veterans that they need to. If guys are making shots at the level that they should, then I think that UConn wins. That's who I picked. But Oklahoma's going to be in that game. They're exceedingly well coached by Porter. He's done a great job. I think their season performance was underrated, not by the committee, but by the public. Playing in that league was really hard. And not winning an overwhelming number of games in that league against the schedule they were presented was not the underachievement that some ascribed. I think they had a really strong year, and they'll certainly present UConn a great challenge.
Who has a chance to make an extended run out of today? And I don't mean Duke. I mean, who, you know, what team could surprise that you have already picked that could maybe, do you have another BYU in your hip pocket?
I don't necessarily. That's the one that from the middle to bottom of the field that I projected to go deepest. But I will say that one of the teams that's interesting to watch is Maryland, because I thought, like, if Maryland had been Houston's four instead of Florida's four, I would have Maryland in the Final Four. Because I think they're outstanding. I really love Derek Queen. When I look at mock drafts and I see Derek Queen anywhere between 10 and 14, I'm like, folks, get back in the gym and watch again. I mean, that's not the 10th best player in this draft. He may be the second best player in this draft. I really like Harper from Rutgers. I think he's outstanding and has great potential. But Derek Queen is being vastly underrated. The other day, Julian Reese, Angel's brother,
yes,
plays for Maryland,
yep,
tweeted out in talking about Derek. He called him Baby Jokic, and I had made the exact same comparison in talking with my colleagues at BTN over the last couple of weeks. I like to be Jokic or any approximation of that. I mean, you have to put in unbelievable work, which is why, like, Kevin Durant is still Kevin Durant. I was in the gym one time with him watching him work out in the summer, and I'm like, this is crazy. He's already Kevin Durant. What is he doing? I mean, the work ethic is just phenomenal, and you've got to be that if you want to be one of those guys. And so I don't know Derek at all, other than to watch him play. And so I don't know whether that is what he wants, but if he wants it, it's there for him. Maybe not to get to that level. But if you're 85%, 90% of Jokic, you're one of the best players in the league. And I think that's available to him.
Great stuff, Mike. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys.